straight out of Austin, Texas. It's On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com, with your hosts, Statesman sports columnists Cedric Golden and Kirk Bowles. Often imitated, never duplicated. Hear it here first, On Second Thought.
On Second Thought, episode 334, brought to you by Hook'em.com and our good friends at Bud Light. Drink them if you got them. I'm Seth Golden, along with the Duck, the Texas Associated Press Managing Editor's Sports Columnist of the Year. Give it up for the Duck. Give it up for the Duck. We are joined by Longhorn legend and the best football critical theory analysis analyst, Rod Babers, joining us. The spring football season is over.
Quit celebrating.
Oh my God, we gotta have a party. Rod B, what's going on?
Thank you guys for having me, man. I appreciate it. Anytime I can come on and talk ball, it's gonna be fun. I'm done watching the spring game. I watched it three times. I watched it initially. I rewatched for the offense and I rewatched for the defense. So I'm ready to roll, man. Let's talk some ball.
I love it. I love it. Three times. I can barely get Sam to watch it once. He loves spring football.
Wait a damn minute. I rewatched the spring game.
And did you?
And then I woke up. And then
Stop it. Well, let's get cracking. Rod B, is there one big takeaway did you have from spring football game? Because everybody's all jazzed up about it.
I could go, obviously, the route everybody wants to, that Texas has the deepest quarterback room in the country. I'll just throw this out there. We all, for Arch Manning to exceed expectations and for him to be a Manning, so the expectations to be sky high, exactly. That was amazing to see him do that. I told people before that spring game, I was actually doing a live remote at Victory Lap right there on West Campus, and I told people, y'all going to be impressed with Trey Owens because I seen him in H-Town. This guy helped the team. KD, you don't just beat KD in the playoffs, man. You got to have some that it quality. He's got that it quality. I even remarked that I think I talked to him, and we had an interview with him on Owen, Texas, that he's actually kind of arrogant, and I like that about him.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to need an arrogant play. Yeah, you need an arrogant quarterback if you're going to sit behind Quinn Ewers and sit behind Arch Manning. You need somebody they believe in their skill set so much that it has borderline on arrogance. And it does with the man, but he's competitive as heck. He's got a hell of an arm. And I love his football character. And I think you saw it on the field that day. But listen, all the quarterbacks are great. Deepest quarterback room in the country. I'm a DB. So when I look at the spring game, I actually looked at it from a glass half empty perspective a little bit of it, because I looked at the defensive backs out there and I think they had a tough day. The secondary had a tough day. That was one of the big issues for Texas last season. Probably the biggest liability on the defensive side of the ball was pass defense, and I don't know how much they improved from last season throughout the spring. So that would be my concern. That's the only issue that I got with this Texas roster. I think ultimately even the interior D-line, which even Sark has admitted, you know, that's a void for them, could be a hole in the roster. He is literally, as we speak, trying to fill it with the best D-tackles he can in the transfer portal. There ain't a lot of weaknesses on this roster, gentlemen. You saw that in spring game. That's why it ended up being such a competitive spring game coming down to the wire. They're deep. And where they aren't deep and talented, you actually saw that too. They aren't necessarily that deep and talented at DB, and you saw that come to fruition. But at wide receiver, at the edge position, at quarterback, O-line,
running back,
they're some of the deepest in the country at those positions.
I'm a little, you know, Terrace Brooks reportedly entering the portal, and yeah, tough.
It's a problem.
It's tough.
It's a problem.
And I think they probably got in Terrace Brooks's one of his cavities and said, look, man, you're still biting on pump fakes all this time later. And, I mean, Arch Manning threw a dime. It was a dime. But the one thing I noticed on that first pass was Terrace Brooks, 15 yards. How bad do you have to bite to be 15 yards behind the play? And I think this might be addition by subtraction. With him reportedly leaving, Rod, what does that open? Who does that open it up for to come in and get more playing time at corner?
Yeah, there were reports that Gavin Holmes was pushing Terrence Brooks at that cornerback spot opposite Malik Muhammad, and he started the spring game, right? Gavin Holmes is the one that started the spring game, so maybe Terrence Brooks felt a certain kind of way about that. He did not prove that on the field. He did not let that motivate him to play better on the field, because you're right, that first touchdown pass to Arch Manning, they are in a cover three. There's no reason for that cornerback to be looking at anything other than the number two receiver, which was what DeAndre Moore was at the time. Once you had that reduced split and that motion to a tight twins, he's seen that before. That was not a sophisticated, complicated switch release, guys. He should have been eyeing number two, and his eyes were in the wrong place. They were transfixed on the number one receiver, and that's how they blew the coverage. And that was a problem with a lot of the big plays that happened. They weren't contested catches in the secondary. There were guys taking bad angles, guys with bad eyes, coverage bust, not being able to pass off receivers in coverage, like the Ryan Wingo game-winning touchdown, where there was another switch release. So for Terrence Brooks specifically, he shouldn't be making those mistakes as a second-year starter in your system, which is basically what he's looked at. And he's still making those types of mental errors and those mistakes. So that says a lot. I don't see him in practice, but I'm assuming in practice, if Gavin Holmes is pushing him and he hasn't separated from Gavin Holmes after starting 13 or 14 games last year, then I'm not saying he's regressing, but he's not necessarily advancing his game or getting better. And so that could be it. I'm with you. I think those meetings, those post-spring meetings, I think they probably kept it real with him. And even when keeping it real goes wrong, and he probably did not like what they had to say about his game and where he stands on this roster. And I'll throw out another theory. My theory also is that Jade Barron wasn't involved in spring at all this year, right? We all know Jade Barron wants to play corner. He believes his NFL future is going to be a corner. That's what would improve his draft stock. That's where he can get paid the most money, maximize his value, is at cornerback. Yes. And Sark has admitted they're cross-training Jade there. If the solution to the secondary issue of who's going to start opposite Malik Muhammad, because he's obviously your most consistent corner, if that's the question, Jade Barron is probably your best answer. And I wonder if he knows that they trust Jalen Gilbert now more. Yes. He's gotten way more reps in the spring. And from what I'm hearing, they like him. And he actually played well in the spring game. I wonder if they're thinking, okay, you know what? Jalen Gilbert can stabilize the nickel. We put Jade Barron at corner. And then we got two corners, two guys that can lock down on the outside for us. And then that makes our secondary, we can put our best five out there. And it gives us a better shot at overall stabilizing the secondary. And maybe if you know that behind the scenes and you're Terrence Brooks, you're like, well, my path to go to the NFL is I got to play number one. So if I ain't going to play here, I got to go somewhere where I can play to keep my NFL hopes alive. Because if Gavin Holmes taking my reps, and now you're telling me Dave Barron about to come out there and take some more of my reps, where am I? So this is a theory I'm throwing out there too. We'll see about what they do with Jade Barron.
But if Jade Barron was the legit answer at cornerback, wouldn't he have been there last year? Because I thought Terrence Brooks has regressed since his freshman year, and I'm not impressed with Gavin Holmes either.
That's true. You had Ryan Watts though, right? You had Ryan Watts out there. Sure. So
the OG,
you know, and they trusted Ryan Watts to be the boundary. Like he's their boundary guy all the time. And I think with that, they were able, and this is probably why, you know, defensively they have some structural integrity issues. They always help that field corner. They a lot of that help the coverage rolling to the field side. And that's why you would see Ryan Watts get beat on some deep balls because he didn't
by himself.
Right, they trust him. Yeah, exactly. So I think now when I watch spring game, though, by the way, I did not see corners travel boundary to field. Field is just the wide side of field. Boundary is the short side of field. That was the case last year. This year, watch the Young Bucks. They all stayed on one side of the field, left corner, right corner, and they'd end up being the field or the boundary depending on where the ball was spotted. So they could change it up. So you're right. I don't know why. Listen, Jade played a little bit of corner last year when they needed him to, but we know Jade wants to play corner. Sure. And they just didn't trust the nickels behind him, I think. I think they trusted Ryan Watts more and Terrence Brooks more than they trusted whoever was going to be the nickel behind him. Now that Jalen Gilbo is healthier – I think Jalen Guilbeault might have shown the coaches, hey, I can handle this nickel spot. At least I can handle stabilizing that star position. And if that is the case, hey, maybe we can experiment. Even matchup-wise, maybe you don't do it, you know, the entire season. But matchup-wise, if they got – you play has got two really good receivers, or, you know, you can move Jahdae Barron out there and say, no, we want to try to take away those receivers' matchup strength on strength. So maybe you can do it week to week based on the matchup with Jahdae Barron. They've implied they want to do that and move some guys around. So that could be another reason. We don't really know what happened with Terrence Brooks. That'll come out later on. We have no idea. I mean, it could be – hell, NIL is probably part of this thing. We have no idea what's going on behind the scenes these
but
days.
Do you think they're looking at cornerback in the portal? Very hard.
Oh yeah, got to now. You got right. to. Right. I'm hearing the Takario Davis is the young man's name. The Arizona corner, 6'3". He's about I think six. Yes, 6'3". He's a guy that led the Pac-12, I believe, in PBUs and passes defended. And he's a guy that's got an NFL future. I think he's their number one because they got the Arizona connection. They just got Bill Norton. Defensive line for Arizona got Sevilla, another defensive line from Arizona because of the Johnny Nansen connection. Guys, think about the irony of that. You bring in Johnny Nansen this offseason, and two of the big holes on your roster now, interior defensive line and now corner, you could potentially fill those voids with the Johnny Nansen connection from Arizona, which was a really good defense. He's a defensive coordinator there. So he led the Pac-12 in passes broken up with 15 and passes defended with 16. Got 2 years of eligibility left, 6'3", 190. So he's a guy I think, it could, you know, if you're looking at connection-wise, that makes sense that Texas would target. And courtesy of my man Jerry Hamilton, he says a Western Kentucky corner, Anthony Johnson Jr., I believe is his name, is another guy that they may look at. But, I mean, you got to exhaust all possibilities if you're Texas losing Terrence Brooks. I mean, that's a starter. So think about last year, you from that defense, you lost Ryan Watts, who was a starter now, Terrence Brooks, who was a starter now, and you lost Jaren Thompson, who was a starter on that in that secondary. Keith Crawford was a contributor in that secondary. You've lost a lot now. Most people would say that secondary wasn't that good. So, you know, hey, good riddance, right? Addition by subtraction, as Ed said. And that may be the case, but we shall see. That remains to be seen. It didn't look like that in the spring game. Didn't look like that.
I'm interested in the glut of receivers. Are there too many pass catchers? You got Silas B coming in from Oregon State after Memorial Day, and I had Roy Williams flashbacks watching Ryan Wingo at the spring game.
Hey,
you just got a lot of receivers. Matthew Golden looks good. Amari Niblock at tight end looks good. Isaiah Bond, he struggled a little bit early, but got his at the end. Is there such a thing, and Kirk and I have argued about this over the years. Shut up, Duck. I wonder what Rod has to say. Is there such a thing as too many wide receivers and not enough chicken to go around the dinner table, Rod B?
I'm going to say no, but inevitably wide receivers are divas. They have big egos, and yeah, I'm sure, you know, the guys who aren't getting the ball enough or think they should be getting the ball more, I'm sure those guys aren't going to love it. But the culture at Texas is a very unselfish one where guys are willing to put the team first. We saw that last year with guys, and I'm thinking that's why Sark is so protective of this culture, because he doesn't want that mentality of guys who are thinking about themselves and thinking about their stats, thinking about their snaps. He wants guys who are thinking about contributing to the team and thinking about how they can help the team. So I think it could become an issue with guys being unhappy. That's what the transfer portal is for. But we'll see. Sark is a circle of trust. I call it the circle of trust. And only a few wide receivers end up penetrating this circle of trust. And you have to learn every position among
the
receivers.
That.
So you got
Yeah.
You got to learn all of them. Yeah. He doesn't mess around. That's part of it. If you don't learn all the positions, then you're not going to be in the circle of trust. You can be in the circle and then lose that trust. And we've seen that from guys on the 4 acres. They're in the circle and then they're out of it.
Right.
I think it doesn't matter how young you are either. You can be Xavier Worthy, boom, freshman, doesn't matter. If you're good enough, you're old enough. But I think the circle will be expanded to at least five receivers this season. I think you got, of course, you got Jonte Cook and Isaiah Bond and Ryan Wingo. Ryan Wingo's among your top three wide receivers, and I'm with you about the Roy Williams comparison. You're right about that. I think Matthew Gold is going to crack that rotation. And I think, honestly, DeAndre Moore is going to crack that rotation.
Good.
I'm not even including Silas Bolden. You got those out. That's six if you include Silas Bolden. So I think it'll be a heavier rotation than it's ever been of wide receivers on the 40 acres, just because you have so much talent and depth there. And I think he'll start. And this is how you satisfy him. It's like the same thing you did with the running backs. When you started stockpiling all these really good running backs, you run more two tailback sets, put them on the field at the same time. And then when you're recruiting guys, you go, hey, man, we play two running backs at the same time. And you don't want to, you know, they all are saying the same thing, right? You don't want to be a running back who's overburdened with too many touches and it wears you down. So you have that narrative. But you also play more of those guys at the same time. Same thing with wide receiver. I would say Sark should introduce what he had at Alabama, a 10 personnel package, not as your, you know, main personnel grouping, but just as something to sprinkle in as a change of pace. That's one back, zero tight ends, four wide receivers on the field at one time. Call it your God speed package. Put all that speed on the field at one time. Put Jaden Blue out there too, and you can just blitz teams with speed. And he did that at Alabama. He called it the red package. I don't know what you'd call it here at Texas, but I think he's got it in his repertoire. And I think you may see it this year, potentially.
I love that. Because to me, probably the three most noticeable Longhorns that jumped out at me, like one was the Trey Owens, which we talked about. Two was DeAndre Moore, who wasn't noticeable last year. Jonte Cook was ahead of him. It looked like it flipped a little bit, at least in the game. And then Colton Vosick, you know, as an edge rusher, 3.5 tackles for loss and a sack. But DeAndre Moore, I love your idea of the 10 personnel. I think when you got that speed, use it, maximize it, make other teams react like you said. It doesn't have to be your base. But if he stuck with three off the spring game, I'd go with, you know, Bond and Wingo and Moore. But that leaves out Cook and Golden and Bolden and a whole bunch of people.
Exactly.
I was afraid somebody we'd see a receiver in the portal just because there's some
Bam. It's coming. That was what I was
there's
about
so many
to say.
Good
somebody,
ones.
Somebody's leaving.
I think it's too many. I think he's right. It's coming. I think it is coming. I think you're right. I think somebody, because seeing how that group, we just named six and we didn't even talk about, you know, Ryan Niblett's in that group, and you just brought in young
Aaron
bucks,
Butler.
Like living stuff.
Butler.
Yeah.
And Nyblack looks like a wide receiver more than a tight end, I think.
He does.
You know, he doesn't look like it.
And I think he's going to have been a secret weapon for them, too, because they ran some empty formation in that game, which is when you empty out the backfield, put everybody out there as a receiver, five receivers out on the route. And I think one of the things they want to do, talk about blitzing opposing teams with speed, think about going, you know, 11 personnel, but then you basically not black as a wide receiver. You go empty, 11 personnel with Jaden Blue in the backfield and go empty. All that speed and force the defense to have to match up, and there's going to be a mismatch somewhere across the board. You can just exploit it. I think you're going to see a little bit more of that this season with Texas, because they have so many weapons in the passing game, and even Jaden Blue, the way they want to use him is in the passing game. You saw that in the spring game as well.
Wayne, yours didn't play much, 2 out of 6. Threw a pick, threw a thick six to Alfred Collins, big boy rumble. I wrote that there's no quarterback controversy, Rob B. This is Quinn Ewers' team, and there's no he's done it with bullets flying. He went to Tuscaloosa and retired Nick Saban. How close do you expect the quarterback competition to be? And we all know that I believe in my heart that Arch Manning's going to play a lot this year, because Quinn's going to get hurt. He gets hurt. I'm not saying he's going to be critically hurt, but he's always going to miss one or two games.
Doesn't flat enough.
Will he get Wally pipped if that happens? If Arch Manning comes in and lights it up, will it? You know, will it be over for young Quinn?
He can't miss too much time. First of all, the NFL scouts want to see him make it through an entire season.
Yeah,
because you don't want drafting a quarterback to be the face of your franchise, to be the potentially first quarterback taken. That's his role, right? To be the first quarterback taken overall in this draft, or to be a guy drafted in the first round if you're not durable. The thing that's knocking down Michael Penix's draft stock right now is durability. It's like, oh man, he's got a lot of injuries. Mm-hmm. A lot of injuries in his history. That those injuries have caused him to be an old. Yeah, exactly. So that's dropping his draft stock because they're not sure if he's going to be durable enough in the
end. I like him.
Same thing with I love Michael Penix, actually. Yeah. I mean, we saw it firsthand.
He's a player. But
durability matters. It matters, guys. It does. You know that. And Quinn, he's got to make better decisions while he's scrambling. He can't be trying to run over linebackers in the SEC. That's part of being a quarterback, making smart decisions. But he hasn't started a complete season of football, started and finished a complete season of football since his sophomore year of high school. So he and scouts know that. And here at Texas, if you look at recent history, say the last 25 years, Texas only had maybe 7 seasons in the last 25 years where a starting quarterback has started and finished every game in a season. It didn't happen for Texas. They needed that backup guy too. So the odds are, said is right. The odds are, we're gonna need Arch, and we're gonna see Arch in extended time this season. The hope with that is that Arch comes in, plays well for a game or two, maybe. But if it's more than 2 games, that's gonna be a problem potentially, because I think Arch is gonna play really well.
Because this ain't Malik Murphy. This ain't Malik Murphy. Just getting it in for a couple of games and keeping the train on tracks. Man, this is a potential superstar that's in a cage locked up and waiting to get unleashed.
And Seth and I both think Arch Manning is going to be the better quarterback, college NFL upside. Do you agree or disagree?
I agree with that.
Eventually. He just got so much mobility, size, arm, you know.
Pedigree.
6'4", pedigree. He's got it all.
He looked like a Manning up there. I mean, he looked like a Manning.
We saw him at Matt's El Rancho with Michael Taft. And there's some people going over and took photos with him. And he stood up, and I was like, damn, Duck, look how big he is.
He's so big.
He's a grown man.
He's big, man.
He's big.
You mentioned Jadon Blue as a receiver. And I think we all really like their running back room. And I don't know what you saw from Gibson and Clark and Wisner, you know, the three backing up C.J. Baxter and Blue. But there weren't many running holes there. And I think this offensive line, if it's overrated. You know, they talk about wanting to win the Joe Moore Award, and that usually goes to Washington, Michigan.
Football games. Don't worry about Joe Moore.
You better be able to run the ball, though. Kind of a concern from what you saw Saturday, Rod?
Yeah. Actually, the second probably most concerning thing was the lack of an interior run game. They didn't seem like they had much of a push. Hopefully that's just the mixing and matching on the offensive lines and how little you had all your starters out there on the O-line, because that's supposed to be the strength of the O-line, actually, run blocking ability. They're supposed to be mauler, right? They're big humans who can just lean on opponents. You can play bully ball, and that's what Texas ultimately wants to do. But you are going into the SEC. Now, it's easier to do that in the Big 12. In the SEC, they also got big humans too, man. They used to play in the scrimmage league.
Exactly.
Yeah, so and listen, maybe we are underrating the Texas defensive front too.
Maybe.
And maybe those guys played a little bit better, because Sabea played really well in the spring game. I was actually very happy with the way he played. I think he's going to be more than adequate at that D tackle position to play the nose for you, and you're bringing in Bill Norton too. So maybe the rush defense is a little bit better than we thought. But I'm with you. I think that is a concern. And Cedric Batch is supposed to be an in-between a tackles runner, and that's supposed to be his strength. And I think that's, you know, that may be for Texas. I think that may be something they have to work on. Remember, even Sark remarks that they started spring and the running game still hadn't found its groove early on, and then they started to work on some things and they got better in the running game. So I wouldn't doubt that. I mean, you are losing Jonathan Brooks, and Jonathan Brooks is great. We don't expect the running back room to have any type of regression because of the culture of that room. It's great. They have a lot of talent. But I would not doubt early on if especially now transition to the SEC, you got Michigan early on. Michigan's got two of the best damn D tackles in the country. That's Jim Harbaugh football. So they are a line of scrimmage team. I wouldn't doubt if the running game isn't a force early on. But the passing game, I expect the passing game to open up stuff for the running game. I expect Texas to be running versus a lot of light boxes because teams should be weary of what you can do in the passing game. This is goes to why Sark wants that deep ball back, gentlemen. That's why he wants it back. Texas came under a lot of criticism when Xavier Worthy set the record at the combine and A.D. Mitchell ran one of the fastest 40 times. People went, so they got the fastest wide receiver duo in the country, and they couldn't complete any deep balls? Like, what's going on there? And then,
They can't throw it to themselves, Rod.
Exactly, right?
Someone's got to get it there.
They're going to get it there. But it's key because that's how you back those safeties up. That's how you back them up, and that's how you make them pay for cheating down into that box. You hit them over the top. And the truth is, Texas really hadn't had that consistently since Sark has been here because it's not a strength of Quinn. Also, going back to Quinn Ewers, gentlemen, because I got to tell you, Arch's deep ball looked beautiful, and so did Trey Owens. His deep ball looked beautiful, right? So the deep ball will come back with Quinn or without Quinn. But I think for Quinn, the scouts want to see him work on his deep ball. That's one thing they've also looked at in the evaluation and said, man, I don't like his deep ball. It's off. Right? Guys are open, and yes, it's a little bit off. It's either over the wrong shoulder, or it's too long, or it's too
much air.
So he's got to work on that too. Too much air. Sark knows this, and Sark, I believe, wants to show scouts. They did in the pro day. Hey, this guy's improved on his deep ball. And that's what staying in school a third year as a quarterback is all about, improving on the weaknesses in your skill set and showing scouts, hey, I get better year to year. I haven't hit my ceiling. I ain't come close to my ceiling. I'm getting better every year. The more I play, the better I get.
To me, he didn't step in his throws as well as Trey and Arch. I just see him. And, boy, you saw Arch moving up in the pocket. Any kind of little pressure, and I know they couldn't hit him, but – he just looked so natural. He really did. Back on the offensive line for just a minute to clean up. Do they have any NFL studs in the offensive line besides Kelvin Banks Jr.?
I think Cam Williams and DJ Campbell, I think those guys have potential NFL ceiling. Jake Majors will get a shot. They're not Kelvin Banks, though. If you're talking about Kelvin Banks, that's different. I don't know if they got that. I don't know if they have that. Not playing right now on the O-line because, I mean, that's first round. That guy's going to be top 10, top 15.
Right.
Would have been last year.
Different caliber.
And, you know.
Yeah, exactly. He would have been this year. He's going to be this year. No matter when he would have left, he would have been a top 10, top 15 pick at tackle, and it's going to be hell. You're going to have potentially 9 to 10 offensive linemen drafted in the first round of this draft. It's a tackle heavy draft, and would have been one of the top three tackles taken. Yeah.
But if you did your Big 12 preseason team right now, I'll bet you Kelvin Banks is the only all SEC preseason thing on the O line, D line.
I wouldn't disagree with that.
That's a little bit of a concern. You want studs up there. Like Alabama, Georgia. Looking at the draft, I put this in my 9 things this week. The last 2 years, Georgia has had 25 draft picks. 2 years, 25 draft picks. Texas had 5. And we know a couple years ago they had 0. They've had 15 first-round picks since Kirby got there. So, the roster is great. It's better. It's depth. I just don't know if it's SEC great yet. Do you?
That's why I'm glad they got that Georgia game this year. I'm really excited, and Kirby gonna have his crew ready. This is what happened in the Bama game for Texas, right? I think Bama game in 2022 that Texas played in Austin. Predicted a 21-point blowout or something for Alabama, and Texas played them close. Should have won that game. It did a lot for the confidence of the team. I've talked to the guys about this. It did a lot for their confidence because they know what Alabama is. It was under Nick Saban. And the same thing when they went out and beat Bama. When they beat Bama, it basically proved to them, all right, guys, this is it. We actually all of our goals that we have for ourselves, no matter how, crazy they seem, or no matter how high the goals that we have and expectations we have for ourselves, we can achieve that. And when they beat Bama on the road, because only a few teams have ever done that in the SEC, in the SEC history for a Nick Saban coach team. And I think the same thing can be true about beating a Kirby Smart coach team in Austin next this season. If they do that, it'll propel them confidence wise going forward. Because you're right, roster wise, Texas shouldn't be right now in the neighborhood of Georgia, because Kirby Smart's been stacking that roster for seven years now. He's been stacking that thing, right? Been having literally the top rated recruiting classes in, I don't know, 3 out of the last 5 years, whatever it may be. And that was the same case for Bama, though. Bama had been stacking that thing for a while. It was Nick Saban. And even though the transfer portal had hit them a little bit harder, yeah, they still played in the college football playoff. That's Nick Saban. That's what he does. So I do think for Texas, if they can measure up with Georgia, and you know whether they beat them or whether it's close, it'll give Texas a real glimpse into how close they are to a championship model. They think they're close. Sark says he's close.
Yeah.
Last one for me. Got a hit on pass rush. Are they going to get enough heat from Colin Simmons, Ethan Burke, Baron Sorrell, and what'd you see from
Trey Moore
and linebacker?
Trey Moore.
And Trey, yeah, newcomer Trey Moore from UTSA. And Anthony Hill, are they still going to move him around like they did last year?
They should move him around. I like that group of edges, though, guys. That is deep. You see why was it Jamon Tabb and Billy Walden transferring?
Yeah, man, had to go.
No path to the field right now.
No reps.
Yeah, and what we saw from Colton Vosick. Whew, I mean, he's impressive. He's
a man.
He's healthy. That's another one you add to the mix. So you're 5-6 deep right now on the edges. That's without Anthony Hill. That's just with Ethan Burke and Baron Sorrell and bringing in a young Colin Simmons as a prodigy. Now you got a Colton Vosick and you got Trey Moore you brought in. And don't forget Justice Finkley. You can throw him in there. You're talking about 5-6 deep on the edges. So, number one, I want them to come up with a NASCAR package where you can put all those guys on the field together if it's third and long in a predictable passing situation. I want to see it. Give me a NASCAR package with those guys out there. That's number one because you're too deep there. And I'm with you. Sark said that their edges are going to be impactful and be a problem this year. They're going to create pressure. Sark doesn't often brag about positions. I think him bragging about that, he knows that they're going to be difference makers on the edge. And I think Trey Moore and Colin Simmons, in terms of the BGO, they're probably the best ball get-off guys of coming around the corner. Texas hadn't had that kind of speed and first step coming off the edge in some time. But if you look at, you know, right now, just the frames of some of the guys, not Trey Moore, not Colin Simmons yet, but he'll get there, just a freshman and a baby. But, man, Ethan Burke size and Colton Vosick size, Baron Sorrell, how he's transformed his body. That might be the most impressive looking group, one of the most impressive looking groups on 40 acres, too. So I love the edges, man. That's where the pressure is going to come from. I don't think it'll come from the interior this year like it did last year. It'll come from the edges. Hopefully, that means that you'll make more splash plays, that you'll get more sacks by collapsing the pocket from the edges. That is what the coaches are trying to figure out. They caused a lot of pressure the last 2 years. It was coming from the interior, but it didn't translate into sacks, tackles for loss, and a lot of splash plays. And it includes the secondary, making plays on the football, and forcing takeaways. So we're hoping now the pressure is coming from a different place on the edges that it will force more of those splash plays, force more negative plays. That's the hope. That's the theory. And we'll see if it works out for them.
Thanks, man. We love visiting with you.
Appreciate you, Rod. We'll see you around, fam.
Oh, anytime, brother.
See you in 4 months.
All right, fellas. Love talking about y'all.
All right, Rod.
Keep up the great work, fellas.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Duck, terrific podcast today with the legendary Rod Babers. You can find him from 6 to 10 on weekdays on the Horn, the Rodcast, hornfm.com. You can hit him up on YouTube with his On Texas Football show. He is by far the best analyst of Texas football going, and he's probably a football coach in waiting. I'd love to see him coach, but that will do it for episode 334 of On Second Thought. We appreciate you guys joining us. The NFL draft's coming up this weekend. We're gonna be all over that next week. Some Longhorns are gonna cash some lottery tickets, and we're going to be there to document. That will do it for this week. For Kirk Bowles, I'm Seth Golden. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com. Join Seth and Kirk every Thursday at lunch for a new episode. Archived episodes are available on iTunes and Google Android Play.